How you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing good. How was your weekend?
Just wonderful. I am hanging out at Newark City, just putting the finishing touches on the new design to our new website for Newark City.
Ooh.
And watching the Giants and Eagles play. I know you are not a sports fan.
No, but I do know that they're playing. I don't know what the state of the game is, though.
Well, I will tell you this. They're apparently going to outfit Lincoln Financial Field next year with solar panels and wind turbines to make it the first stadium that generates its own power, which sounds awesome until you see the designs, which is going to render, in my opinion, Lincoln Financial Field from being something that looks really cool to something that looks like probably the wimpiest stadium ever.
Well, that sounds pitifully Philadelphian. That's a bummer. I'll have to check out those designs myself. Well, that's cool. How have things been otherwise? How's the rest of your week?
Oh, just fine. I don't know what's going on. Yeah, we're getting stuff done, man. We're chugging along. We had some cool events going on. We're getting ready to we're sort of have a bit of a break this week at Newark City. Girl Development is off for the week, so we have a little bit of events. We did Geek Movie Night last Thursday. We watched War Games back to back with Flight of the Navigator.
That's awesome.
Yeah, good movies.
That's a well selected double feature. We had so last week when we talked, I was sort of on my way out of bar camp, and then on Thursday was TEDx Philly, which was one of the most incredible events I've ever been to. Hats off to Roz and the whole planning team. They really just did a remarkable job, and it was really cool to watch. You know, from the Roz and all the volunteers that were involved to really almost every facet of the way TEDx came together seemed to be a pretty epic culmination of a lot of the really great activities that have gone on in the last few years, to highlight some of the most important things that are going on in the last few years. So it was a pretty mind-bending day. But I was pleased to be there to experience it.
Excellent. Yeah, I've been hearing a lot about TEDx Philly for a while now, and I know that it featured a lot of the same people organizing it as is the team that has done a lot of the other events in Philly, Ignite Philly and Bar Camp, things like that. Seems like they've got a really good crew going on over there.
Yeah, this was really like, how do we take all the lessons learned and polish this into something just really, really fantastic? And have you been in the Kimmel Center for anything before?
I have not, no.
It's spectacular. And the room, the Perlman Theater where it was held, is, you know, typically for symphony orchestras and things like that. And that was the venue for TEDx Philly. So acoustically appealing, but really just an inspiring, beautiful room to begin with. And from top to bottom, the thing just, the whole event just oozed Philly in all the right ways. It was, I can't say enough good things about it.
Very cool. And do you know whether or not that event or the other recent events got any substantial or significant media coverage?
Yeah, well, I mean, TEDx has been, actually TEDx and Barcamp in general, but really TEDx has been getting a lot of positive coverage all over the place. Roz as well, I think, has gotten some good publicity for herself as an organizer and a leader, which has been really, really good. Which brings me to what I really wanted to talk about tonight and sort of what media can do for co-working. I know we've been blessed to have had quite a bit of coverage in a variety of different mediums. I know you guys have as well. And so a couple of things that were sort of on my mind about when press goes really well how you get press, well, when press goes horribly wrong, what are like common trends in the way the media tends to cover co-working. So I've got more notes than I think I did last week. Maybe we should start with, you know, where press typically comes from. I don't know when you guys get covered. I would say that you guys are in a particularly interesting. You being in New York is different from most other cities for a lot of reasons, but I feel like media is a big one, given the fact that your big daily happens to be everybody's big daily.
Right.
So that notwithstanding, what are some of the avenues that you go through when seeking press? Do you guys do press releases, or do you just sort of promote through your normal channels and things get picked up, or what's the story?
You know, it's been really strange. We've done maybe one or two press releases here and there, but when we've looked into it fairly extensively, we've looked into PressLift, we've looked into some of the other platforms that sort of let you split the difference between print media and online media and sort of, you know, publish your stuff online. And we really haven't seen much from that effort. Whenever we try to go out and get media, it doesn't seem to work. Ironically enough, when we don't try to get the media ends up coming to us. And so we at some point we just stop trying.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so we've had basically a similar experience from day one. I mean, one of my favorite stories to tell is we had moved into the first Indie Hall office, and there was four of us sitting on the floor with our laptops. There was no furniture, no desks, no nothing. And we were just sort of figuring out, okay, now we have a building. What now? The interesting thing was when I randomly got a phone call from a woman who does a lot of like business analyst writing for the Philadelphia Inquirer, and she said, "We heard you guys are doing something. Can I come down and talk to you and bring a photographer?" And I said, "No, absolutely not. There's nothing to photograph yet." and that sort of kicked off a lot of lessons and a lot about getting press and interacting with the media. And the first thing I ever learned was how important it is to really craft your message. And that first conversation with Jane Von Bergen, I had no experience in that. And what I realized is they will write anything that you say, especially the things that you hope don't want them to write. And I was quoted talking about talking to the cat and not wearing pants and all kinds of nonsense like that. And so over time, as we've talked about on our weekly call, you get pretty good at talking to the press, and you learn what words are going to stick with them and are most likely to, and what ideas are most likely to make it into the press. So for us, we really try to focus on the big ideas and don't let them get too close to the nitty-gritty, because inevitably they're going to screw it up. Which is unfortunate, but it's the truth. All that being said, you know, we've got good relationships, and I really think like everything else just comes down to relationships. Where, you know, if we want to get covered, I know who to start seeding things to, but ultimately it ends up happening on its own.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's funny you mention it, because you've displayed over the years what seems to be a talent for eminent quotability, and things like not wearing pants, talking to your cat. You seem to sort of naturally, maybe on purpose, maybe not, be able to come up with things that just are great fodder for people who are writing up stories or quoting people on things. What I found, and I agree in terms of sort of not getting too much into the weeds, because what I found is that the people who have interviewed us, and in general, you know, when you're talking to the media is covering something most likely because it is there's a story, there's a narrative, and more than likely that it fits into some kind of a trend that's going on in the world. You know, they want things that people want to read about. And so if there are sort of, you know, existing trends that are happening, they'll try to fit your story into some kind of a narrative.
Well, and this is, I mean, you make an extremely important point. And when other businesses have asked, you know, how do you guys get so much press? And I said, well, we keep doing interesting things. And
yep.
What I realized after a while is it's not about doing something interesting once. It's when you become a recurring source of interesting things, you start generating that narrative for them. And I think that's the other thing is that they're not going to write the story you want them to write. They're usually coming in looking for their own story. And I think that's really important to recognize as well.
Yeah, well, and on the other side, when you're seeking media attention, you have to sort of keep that in mind as well. If you're sort of cold calling a reporter or if you're meeting a reporter at an event and you want them to write about you, you know, you're not going to necessarily impress them by just telling them that you're awesome and without any kind of a context. But if you do know, however, that, you know, the city's economy is in flux and people are out of jobs and they're looking for new places to go to try out their careers, you can frame what you're doing in the context of what's relevant and what's important and what their readers are interested in now.
Sure.
And when you put it in context, it just gives them a lot less to have to think about. The less they have to think about how the story is going to get written, the easier it is for them to be interested in writing it.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, they are getting pitched dozens of shitty stories every single day. And so you need to, like anything else, you need to differentiate one way or another. So setting them up for a win where they're going to look good to their employer, to their readership, whatever it is, ultimately I found is one of the best ways to get them on board. And one other thing I wanted to talk about while we're on the subject is, what is the outcome? Like, why are we looking to get press in the first place? I know that from our perspective, our ability to directly tie most membership back to any form of press is pretty nominal. Almost everything that we've gained in terms of membership has been from word of mouth. That being said, I think the buzz helps carry the message around and sort of generate this at least feeling of ubiquity where people are like, I keep hearing about you guys, maybe I should come check you out. And there's the rule of three times, where you hear about something three times in a row and you feel exceptionally compelled to go look at it for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's probably the biggest benefit to press. But beyond that, the reason that I'm usually interested in getting press is more generally spreading knowledge than it is about self-promotion or promotion of Indie Hall, for that matter.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and not just that, but especially, you know, we're both in pretty big cities, and I don't really know much about what it's like to be in a smaller city, but, you know, my rough understanding of things is that, you know, depending on what city you're in, the different types of media are increasingly powerful ways to cross barriers and maybe raise awareness in places where there isn't necessarily the same kind of infrastructure, the same kind of communication systems that you have here. You know, our cities have tons of meetups. We have tech meetups. We have Ignites and bar camps and TEDx's and things like that. And I imagine a lot of cities don't necessarily have all those things going on where the types of people who are the would-be coworkers could easily be, you know, already congregating.
Right.
I imagine that kind of exposure could be even more useful depending on the kind of city or non-city that you're in.
Well, I guess this fits into the typical approach that we talk about when it comes to, you know, how do I communicate with potential coworkers? And the bottom line is that you need to go wherever they are. And so this is just another expression of the same ideas. If you're in a place where the majority of people are getting or finding out about what's going on through the mainstream news, then that's where you need your message to be.
Right.
Cool. Right on. Well, the other thing that's been, I guess the original thing that brought this discussion and the reason I wanted to talk about this week is the fact that, you know, I have Google Alerts set up for the words co-working. So I see a lot of articles showing up every day, and it's more and more and more. And I'm noticing some interesting trends in either, you know, maybe good articles versus bad articles, articles that convey things that are of universal value to articles that are completely superficial and, quite frankly, a waste of the words that they're printing on paper. And I actually jotted down a couple of top five lists. And I'm normally not a fan of top five lists, but I figured we could get these out there, and hopefully some journalist is out there listening and takes some advice and things to avoid in writing an article about co-working versus things that actually make it a valuable one. So if you don't mind, I'll go through the 5 points, and then maybe we can talk about them a little bit.
Do it up.
All right. So the top five mistakes that journalists make in writing about co-working. I feel like I'm David Letterman right now.
Number one.
The focus on techies and the fact that while this industry and this idea was born from sort of a tech-focused group, I know we've learned that things only get better when it's not just techies in the room. So any article that's focused on how this is something for techies is largely missing the point. Number two is a
number
focus
two.
On... Do you want me to just let you say the numbers?
Number two.
is a focus on shared equipment. You know, the printers, the fax, the internet, and all of the shared resources, the very superficial elements of what is
thinking of it as a glorified rental or incubator kind of a space. That's a real frequent issue, yeah.
Yeah. And that sort of ties into number three.
Number three,
which is the focus on real estate and also green. And not that any of those things are fundamentally wrong or inaccurate. And the fact that co-working is inherently green by the fact that you're sharing resources and lowering a footprint across a group of people. And also you're occupying real estate and making real estate affordable to a group of people. But the focus is on the amenities rather than on the relationships. And then number four is articles that focus on founders. And I can say this one with a great degree of confidence myself, but I'm curious what you have to say, is articles that spend a ton of time introducing the founders of a co-working space are typically – well, all I ever learn is that person – was also working from home, or they were, you know, they had an office that didn't have anybody in it. I never hear anything about that person's like mission in life or anything useful. So it's just, again, it's promoting a person, not a cause. And then number five is a lack of mention of the global community and the history of co-working and the fact that this has got a bigger context than just whatever the local regional effort is. And then I will say a bonus, number six, is that pesky hyphenation. I know that we probably won't win this battle anytime soon, but the hyphenation does drive me nuts. That's my list.
there's been some discussion about that in the co-working Google group. And I believe that what came out of that I think was the end game is essentially that we have to apply for it to be a word that gets added to the dictionary, essentially.
Right. It shows up as a misspelling. So, like, I almost don't blame the journalists, but again, I feel like if they had done the research, that they would see that the hyphen doesn't belong.
Well, the other thing that I'm curious about in that discussion, I don't remember it getting brought up, but if you have a brand name, you could call something just about anything, and if it's a brand, they'll call it by the brand. And
right.
There's two sides to the word co-working. There's co-working, we talked about this in the past, but not on the show, lowercase c co-working, which is the generic word to describe, the thing that people do in a co-working space. And then there's uppercase C co-working, which is the name for the movement and the sort of the global thing that brings us all together. And, I feel like one, the existence of one as sort of a formal name or as sort of a semi-brand should sort of, make it possible for them to use that word. You know, this isn't the co-dash working movement. It's the co-working movement.
Right.
And they call it that.
So as a bonus to my top five mistakes that journalists make in writing about co-working, I do have top five elements of a valuable co-working article. I know that we're running short on time, but may as well toss them out. I'll go a little quicker this time.
Okay, and I'll not slow you down by being annoying and counting off the numbers. So fire away, Alex, go.
All right, number one, a focus on the improved quality of life that's introduced by co-working. Enough said. Number two, a focus on building relationships between coworkers and the potential outcomes of that. Number three, a focus on member accomplishments, big wins, launches, successes, so on and so forth. Number four, an articulation of benefits over amenities. Now, it's tricky. That's really something that people like you and me need to make our jobs and helping people with those words, but I think that needs to be said. And number five is encourage people that are in industries other than technology to check out their local co-working community and see if they can get involved.
All right. Well, you blew through that in about a minute. That was well done. I think that this list is important because it's something that as a reporter or someone within the world of media, these are great things to keep in mind if you're really trying to get to the root of why co-working spaces are so interesting and so exciting and so significant and important. But I think they're also valuable things to keep in mind if you, as a co-working space owner or member, end up talking to the media. Emphasizing these kinds of things can help illuminate the person interviewing you as to what it is that makes this thing special. You know, because a lot of times a reporter might get, somebody might get sent to talk to you and not really understand what the heck they're, why they're doing it or why it's important. And researching about it online doesn't necessarily help you that much.
Right.
Especially if the ground's already been tread by other folks who didn't quite get it. So
Right. So if a reporter's calling you, rather than tell them what co-working is, try and graze over and give them something unique, give them something that's going to tease them into sort of experience it for themselves. They'll find the story, given the opportunity.
Right. Fair enough. So are we close enough to 5 minutes left for the final question?
I think so.
Okay. I believe it's my turn to ask you. Is that correct?
That is also correct. So fire when ready.
All right, I am ready to fire, and I'm keeping it within the theme of this episode this week. So co-working has been hitting the press more and more pretty steadily each year. I'd say this year was certainly the most covered that co-working has been of all of the years since it's existed, and certainly for New York City, I mean, we've been in everything, and it's just been wild. A wild year as we come to the last 5 weeks or so. So what I'm wondering, as we're seeing co-working becoming increasingly mainstream, as it's now, it's been in virtually every channel, every form of mass media, every newspaper has covered it at some point by now, and even to the point where some schmuck got on the cover of Inc. magazine.
That's schmuck indeed.
Yes. So my question to you is, what is realistically going to be, what would you like to see and what would you expect to see next year, by this time next year? What's going to be the big thing in media relating to co-working? Is it going to get bigger? Is there going to be one thing, or is it going to be, is it going to be lots of things? What would you like to see next year that, that you think is practically achievable in media related to co-working?
Well, I think the thing that's missing from the mainstream coverage right now, it's a lot of sensationalism around sort of the emergence of it. And so I think what's going to happen in 2011 and more years to come is two things. One is some of these places will stabilize. Some groups will stabilize and produce incredible things. And so I think the very concrete outputs of co-working are going to start getting press, and co-working will become part of other stories instead of the story. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, and I completely agree. I think, you know, what I've said for a long time is that co-working is a concept, and that various things plug into it, and you know, and it can exist even if the word isn't being used. That it's just a word to describe something that's happening, and
right.
That's going to exist in various contexts, with or without the word, regardless of whether it's spelled with or without a hyphen. And
The other thing that I wanted to say on that is I also think, and I hate to end on sort of a downer note, but I think we're going to see some of the shakeout of the growth that we've seen in places that have opened in ways that are not sustainable, or in markets where, quite frankly, it's not needed, or with leadership that doesn't have the vision necessary to drive it forward, or any number of things. And I think that my hope is that the press plays a role in sharing the patterns across the closures to come. I'm 100% sure, there's not a doubt in my mind, that there's going to be a wave of spaces that just couldn't make it work. And that sucks, and I hate that bad things have to happen to good, hardworking people that make it want to work. But if the press is going to do anything useful, my hope is that they're going to dig into that and figure out why co-working doesn't work in some places, so that we can all learn from that.
Well, I think that's a good point, and actually that brings up the question to me of the opposite. So maybe we can end on a not downer note, since we do have about a minute left, which is not just that some co-working spaces are going to maybe go the way of the dodo, but some are going to expand. And we've seen Office Nomads start to make a public effort at this, actually building a community effort to open their second space. And there are some franchise models that are out there of places that are at varying degrees overlapping with the world of co-working. And you know, and what I know that it's certainly on our minds as well here at New York City, of what role we play as our space fills up in the development of other spaces, and you know, if any, what role we play in that. So I think that's going to be something that's going to become significant next year as well. Is what does this look like when co-working spaces become more than just one space,
or more than just any space?
Now, there you go.
if we're thinking big, I mean, to take it a little bit closer to home, I know that we're thinking about growth in terms that are far beyond physical space, and more how can Indie Hall grow in a way where it impacts beyond the walls of the facility, and without necessarily the direct support of the business side of things as well. So.
Trends that need space for metaphysical space here on the co-workers.
Something like that. Man, I think that's time to call it.
I'd say so. It was great talking to you again, Alex.
Likewise. I'll see you in a week.
All right. Take it easy, dude.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Likewise, same to you.
Peace out, man.
Bye.